Hey everyone, it's Michael. Before we begin, I want to remind you all to join the new Union Sports Goalkeeping Community, a social media network that reimagines how we engage, educate, and entertain one another. To download free, go to www.theunionsports.com or the Union Community on Apple or Google Play stores. Thanks for making the Union possible, and on with the show. Welcome to Inside the 18. I'm Michael Maggett, live from Hollywood, California. With me, not right now, but momentarily, you'll have 99 World Cup winner Saskia Weber, who is in the middle of a move. And as some of you guys know, that is an insane thing to be going through. So she will be joining us momentarily. But that's okay, because joining us right now as a guest panelist, all the way from Iceland, which I think is somewhere in Europe. I'm not exactly sure where in Europe. We have HK football, Haukau football T.
Yeah.
Did I get it right?
Yeah, perfect.
Haukau football T goalkeeper Audrey Baldwin. Audrey, this is awesome. First off, thanks for reaching out. Thanks for reaching out and wanting to come on the show.
Yeah, thanks for responding so quick. I was just like, I feel like everything you've been turning out is so great. So of course, anything I can contribute.
I mean, honestly, I mean, I think one of the really cool things about like what you're kind of doing and kind of with your journey and everything like that is that a lot of young goalkeepers out there, they don't recognize the fact that there are so many opportunities for them overseas to play in so many different countries and experience so many different cultures and learn from all these different people. Why don't you kind of just catch up people a little bit with kind of your journey? Because it seems like you've played for 10 different countries, a lot of countries.
Yeah, I have been all over, and that's exactly why I want to speak about my journey, because it's so unconventional and people don't think about it. I mean, I started in, I think, 2014, the winter of 2014. I went to Portugal, and then I paid my way through that. Then my first professional contract, I was in Iceland with Keflavik, and then I transferred out, went to Denmark with Fortuna Ehring, started Champions League and everything there. After that, I came back to Iceland in 2016 for a different team, for Fylkir. And then 2017, I went to France for JVC, which is now Paris FC. They, like, the year after I left, they like switched everything. And that was another incredible, crazy journey. And then I left there, went to train with the Washington Spirit for a bit. Then I went to Kosovo for Champions League.
Wait, how do you pronounce Washington Spirit? That one sounds very confusing to me.
Yeah, that's probably the only one people will know that I'm like actually talking about. But yeah, after that, I took a chance to go to Kosovo for Champions League and got picked up from Israel from there. Went back there for two different teams. And then, wow, where did I go after that? That was 2018. Yeah, then 2019, went back to Iceland. Wow, I've been a lot of places.
Yeah, you've been a lot of
Spain 2020, and then 2021 I went to Cyprus for Champions League again.
Why is like Hosteling International or like worldtraveler.com like not sponsoring you? Like
this is seriously, there's always these ads that are like get paid to travel and stuff, and I'm like, can I just add that to my resume? like I just want to start working. I'm already traveling. You just need to pay me.
I you know, one of the really cool things about what you were just sharing right there was the fact that you said that you paid your way for your initial trial over in Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, that must have been, I mean, talk about taking a risk right there. Was that one of those things where you're like, how committed are they really to me? And how much do I believe in myself to be willing to make that type of sacrifice?
So I've had a couple of different experiences with me paying my way. When it first started with Portugal, I gave myself a timeline. I didn't get drafted. I wasn't at a big school or anything, so I didn't get drafted. I gave myself a timeline of getting signed somewhere, 2 years. Almost a year went by, and my friend slash coach in the area is from Portugal, and so he made some calls. I just went and played there. It was not professional at that time. Like now Sporting and stuff all have their own teams for women and like have professional players. It was not like that. Like everyone was going crazy of the fact that there was an American even just at these two teams that I had gone to. And so I paid to stay with his mom, and I would take the bus and just like paid my way. And I did it because I knew that if I was over there, I could prove myself. It was more of like, I didn't have the big name. I didn't have the big school behind me. So I just needed to prove that I could do it. And I knew that I would get at least more exposure. And then people get more excited when you're in a place to like take you up. So I just kind of bet on myself a bit.
I mean, and also this is something that, you know, we've talked about with like, you know, like Kaylin Marquise, who was recently on, who just, you know, moved on to Arsenal in the WSL, but that just the life experiences, you know, I think a lot of young women out there, you know, who are playing in Division I college or D2 or, you know, or whatever level here in the United States don't recognize the fact that they still have an entire life ahead of themselves outside of just football. And to be able to take these opportunities to experience different cultures, I mean, you must learn what, 17 languages? Like, you may just be, you're a Rosetta Stone. You're like, we don't even need the app. It's just you.
I wish I could speak all the languages fluently. Like when I go to a new country, it always takes me at least 2 weeks to like stop speaking the other language that just comes really naturally to me. Like at least the simple words, right? Like I would always learn everywhere. And yeah, I was always like having to control like what I was saying. It still slips out. I think one other day I spoke Portuguese and English and Icelandic all in one sentence. I don't really know why.
Oh my God. You're like, so my sister, so basically, so I was born in Venezuela and then we moved to Brazil right afterwards and then the United States, like not that long after that. So my little sister, who's a couple years, you know, younger than me, she was basically learning how to talk and she lived in three countries by the time she was of speaking age. Oh, so yeah. she would look at like something and she gets so frustrated. She would, like, my dad would tell me, he's like, she used to just like cry because she'd be like, I don't know. Do I call that a what, cat, gato, like what, whatever that is in Portuguese, gete, yeah. I don't know, gatinho, I don't know, little cat.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. And I mean, I was actually surprised this last time I came back to Iceland. I just started hearing things. I was like, wait, I know what that means. Like, it just like came to me and I'm like, what is happening? I actually understand what's happening.
I mean, I do have a question about that in regards to like with goalkeeping, because I would think that like, and we are going to get into that topic, and today's topic, guys, is going to be effective communication. Audrey, the fact that you speak so many different languages and maybe even not fluently in all those languages must make like goalkeeper terminology and communication clear, concise, and direct on the field a lot easier for you.
It is like actually insane. Every country that I've had to go to, that's like the first things I learn. And even like a few years, like after I actually really got started, I would always like ask the coaches right when I would sign or whatever it was, be like, all right, what are the terms I need to know? Like what's left, what's right, what's middle, like all these different things, just the basics, because a lot of these countries didn't necessarily speak English either. Like I had the hardest time in France. That was so hard for me. I don't know why.
Wait, they didn't speak English in France? I figured I've already there.
Okay, so they do, but like those rumors about the French not like wanting to speak English and like being mean, that was my experience. I'm not saying that's everywhere. It just so happened that my coaches were like, nope, we're speaking French to you. If you really don't understand, you can ask someone else, but we're speaking French to you and you just have to try and learn, which was obviously a great way of learning. But at the same time, I just could not. It didn't come fast enough for me to be able to speak to them as fast as the game was going, because it was also a higher level. Yeah. So the game was going fast and I couldn't like think of what to say, but I wanted to say it. And it was, yeah, that was hard. But yeah, every other country and everything that I've gone to, those are the first things I learn. Makes it really simple of just saying like one word. But yeah, it does take some time to hopefully figure out that language, but you do learn it quicker.
So when you were in France, so fortunately some friends of the show, AC, Fallon, Murph, all of them, they were over in France as well. Were you there around the same time as all of them?
No.
Fallon,
okay. I was 2017.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Because I know that, basically, you know, one of the experiences that like, you know, Fallon was talking about in regards to while she was over there, she started coaching, you know, youth keepers while she was at Stade de Reims. I think, yeah. I'm hopefully pronouncing that right. And she's like, they didn't speak English. So she was like trying to like, it was a lot of like miming and a lot of like charades and those sorts of things to like work with these kids. Because obviously with an adult, you know, maybe they don't want to speak English, but they probably have a reasonable grasp of it. With the kids, they really did it. Did you do any youth work while you were in any of these countries?
Yeah. So I've always done youth work here in Iceland every time that I've come back. They're pretty decent at English, but it's still hard because then they don't want to speak English back. They just kind of understand. So again, another way to learn it really quick. But I also coached in Spain and I didn't know any Spanish. So I would always like it, prepping for a training or prepping to coach was 10 times longer because I would try and think of and look up the exact words I needed to say just in case they didn't understand me. And I would practice saying it and I would practice what I want to say. And I would always have my phone on me for a translator just in case. But yeah, it was a lot of miming and stuff then. And yeah, I coached in a lot of the different countries, but I think Spain was probably the hardest to coach with because they were not, it also wasn't Spanish because I was in like the north. So yeah. I think it's like Catalonia. I'm going to say that wrong.
Catalonia?
Yeah. So some of them spoke English or English kind of, some of them like obviously they understand Spanish, but then they wanted to speak like, and I'm like, I don't know, I'm sorry. And I would try so hard, but luckily like the youth are also always willing to help you. They're always willing to just like tell you something versus like when you're older, they don't necessarily feel like putting the energy into it. So it's actually a really good thing to coach younger kids to learn the language and learn, and like you said, miming, and you always have to demonstrate everything. And then it's just kind of like, then you know exactly what to do. And first things I learned is watch me, like always learning the language, like watch me. And then like this, not this, this. Wait, and like, just like simple
it's like
things.
A jazz hands type person.
Like this.
I feel like it is like musical theater because you have to be like really big gestures so that like mm-hmm. they can like actually figure it out type of a thing. You can't be subtle about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God. Now, question in regards to like with the Icelandic and everything, obviously you've spent a good deal amount of time in Iceland. It's a small country. So you say, obviously, you know, a lot of them speak English because they pretty much have to because not a lot of people around the world speak Icelandic.
Yeah.
How difficult is Icelandic?
It is so hard. So my first year, and I mean, this also speaks to just my journey and what you're saying about like youth keepers are looking to play abroad.
Yeah.
I was always looking for the next best thing or like always looking for that step up. So the first time I came to Iceland, I was like, I don't need to learn Icelandic. I'm never coming back. Second time I came here, I don't need to learn Icelandic. I'm never coming back. Like, I'm never going to be here. And I actually remember getting mad at my teams and everything for not speaking English around me and for like not speaking English, like in the meetings and stuff like that. I had to like ask for separate meetings, which is normal in the sense of with like really, really professional clubs. But when you compare where I am realistically, like Iceland versus PSG, like something like that, like Barcelona, like, you know, like they're going to have translators and stuff there. They didn't really have that. And they didn't really care so much like when I was here. So I was just like, well, I'm never coming back. I'm just not going to learn it. I only learned the basic words, like I said, on the field. And then I started to pick it up a little bit when I came here in 2019, but didn't really try. And then when I came back this year and I started understanding more and more, I can understand. It's easier to start understanding things, but to say the words, they make fun of me all the time. They keep trying to tell, and I was like, I swear I'm saying it right, but like it's coming out completely different. Like I had the hardest time saying one of our competitors' names. I just learned how to like properly say it. And it's like Haukur, but I would always say like Haukur or Haukur. And it's like, it's so similar. So to me, I'm saying it. And I'm like, you guys should know what I'm saying. And they're like, we don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, I swear it's the same language. So it is so hard to pronounce the words and read it.
Hey, Sask.
Hey, you guys. What's going
Hi.
On? Sorry, I was a little delayed.
All good, all good. We discussed the fact that that you were in the middle of a conversation because you're moving. You got to move going. That's why that's
trying to.
That's why no Herman trophies in the background or gold medals or any sort of fancy stuff. You're just
all backed up.
Or you're just trying to be humble around us us folk right here. We were just talking with Audrey, but Saskia, just to kind of catch you up, Audrey's literally played in like I don't know. like 17 different places. And we were talking about the fact that like hotels.com, worldtraveler.com, Airbnb, they all need to be sponsoring her because she's
there.
Like,
you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Manifest it, right? Make it happen.
Exactly.
Make it happen. But you know, one of the things, Audrey, you know, we joke around about, you know, the opportunities you went to Portugal and you had to pay your way and everything. I don't think a lot of young women out there understand the fact that, you know, obviously, you know, you're getting closer to the veteran side of your career, let's just say. And a lot of young women out there, they don't realize the fact that like there was no WSL, there was no Iberdrola, there was no, you know, Ligue, you know, Feminine, you know, all these things kind of started happening while you came to Europe,
yeah.
You know, and that was kind of the way to get to Europe at the time. It was kind of semi-pro.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I realistically didn't even know that going abroad was an option until like I only knew because I trained with one girl who went abroad to Russia or something and then to Iceland to play. I didn't know anyone else that had done it. I didn't know that it was a thing. I didn't realize how big women's football was. Of like, there's like 5 divisions in every country and like 10 teams in every division. And I still get it. I'll come abroad and everyone's like, why aren't you just playing in the States? Like, we just got 11 teams now? And like out of 50 states plus internationals, like there's no way. Like there's just no way. Unless you're in it, you just have to look for another way.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's a really good point. I think, honestly, you know, Audrey, you know, just the fact that you, you know, made that decision to go over there, have these experiences, do you feel it's helped you become, because I know that now the next step for you is, you know, getting into coaching. Do you feel that you're a better coach now because you did have those experiences playing in these countries, playing at these levels, working with these kids who may not speak the same language, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, a lot of it is the experience, and there's so many different types of goalkeeping. And I think that's what I really got exposed to, and all the different types of coaching and what is professional, what isn't, how to interact with different people, different types of people, especially girls, like what this player needs versus what this one, do they need to get yelled at? Do they need to just be spoken to? Do they need just the encouragement and not instruction? They just need encouragement in order to do well. Like I've met so many different people and different coaches and seen what works. And like you said, now that I'm on like the veteran side of things, I've been able to actually put it into practice from leading in the back. And it's proven to be much more successful, even just for me as a player that's communicating on the field, of how to speak to my teammates, how to speak to my coach if I need to, and how to speak to like the youth and get them really involved.
No. You know, Saskia, I have a question for you now that you've joined us on this lovely panel right over here. And obviously with your tremendous experience on both sides, coaching and playing and now sports commentating, shout out to you with all the great work you've been doing for Angel City FC in the color commentary booth. You know, do you feel that it's not just about getting the reps on the field, but playing, but the more experiences you have as a human being or playing in different environments only makes you a better goalkeeper from a communication standpoint?
No, absolutely. Again, everything, like different places, different things. Like, you know, like when I was in Japan, just learning how to communicate with the team on the field, off the field, what professionalism looked like, how things were handled, all of that just makes you a better, more well-rounded goalkeeper and coach and person. Being able to travel, being able to live like semi-pro and like this level of hotels from one extreme to the next, and all of that it's part of the experience. And to be able to bring that back and then coach and take all those different experiences just makes you a better coach, makes you more understanding, because it's every person's an individual and everybody handles things differently, whether it's traveling, whether it's their living situation, whether it's maybe having to work and play at the same time. Putting yourself in all those positions makes you better to be able to communicate with people and handle their situations.
And, you know, and I think, well, you know, one thing, well, as we segue kind of into effective communication, Audrey, and feel free to step in anytime you want in this conversation here, but is the fact that I think most goalkeepers out there in the world are more in the boat of your boat, as opposed to, you know, there's a lot of people out there who all they see is the Premier League, you know, or the NWSL or whatever. And they think that that is the professional game. 99.9% of the professionals out there are experiencing the game the way you are.
Yeah. And that's why a lot of, at least I know for females, just personally, that's why a lot of them quit way earlier than they ever thought they would or when they should, is because they have this dream of playing professionally. And then when it comes down to it, they don't realize that, like, okay, we're not the top. Like,
right.
You'll know what professional is when you get there. Like, university is going to be one of the most professional environments that you will see, especially if you go abroad. Like, that's just the reality of it. And you have to be open to different setbacks and, like, comfortable with being by yourself and different mm-hmm. sets of communication, like different expectations on foreigners. Oh my God, the expectations on foreigners. You're coming in to get paid to do a job. The people around you might not be. They're just there to play. They're just there to enjoy the game. They don't care as much as you do. They never will. They did not leave their family to come here like you did. And that's the part of understanding where you are versus other people. It's like, you can't always expect certain things from this lifestyle. Like, it's just not going to work out in your favor unless, even if you sign for the big clubs. I know I've had friends that have had not great experiences with big clubs that you would think you're going to be happy at. It's like, you got to find where you fit in.
Yeah. I mean, you look at it, like, even here in the US, like, I agree with you that dream of, I'm playing pro now. Not everybody's making $1.5 million like Trinity Rodman.
Exactly.
You know, you have the bulk of your team is getting a minimum wage, a minimum salary. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's why you see the turnaround, because, you know, you come out of college and you're playing pro, you're barely making ends meet playing pro. And you realize at some point, well, what am I doing? I have to start a life. Like, you know, I want to buy a house. I want to start a family. I need some sustainability. And that's why you see on that level, the turnaround. And even overseas, like, for me, I agree with you, in Japan, I was there, my job was to play soccer. But my teammates, that, number one, you're taking a spot from one of their countrymen. Number mm-hmm. two, my teammates were, like, working. They had jobs all day long. They weren't getting what we were getting. They weren't, my apartment was paid for, everything like that. No, that's not what they were going through. So their experience is totally different than my experience.
I think that's a great, like, segue into this type of thing, because about communication, you know, and obviously, you know, with being effective in communication, Audrey, like, the fact that you have to be able to communicate to these people, not just on the field, but off the field, and you might be in a position from a financial standpoint or standard of living standpoint that they might not be getting, or an esteem standpoint, those sorts of things. You have to find a way to humble yourself and be able to work with these people. So, kind of in your mind, like, how can you be effective in communicating with players of all different levels and skill sets and all that?
I think it's so important to actually get to know your teammates first. Like, and I think that's a big mistake that a lot of foreigners will make. And I spoke on it a little bit, like, early in my career, I was, like, always looking for the next step. I was always looking for the next thing. And I never really made genuine connections with everyone. I would maybe make a connection with, like, one or two. Sometimes it wouldn't even be on my team. But the more connections, the more you get to know your teammates, what they're doing, what they're going through, then you kind of learn how to motivate them. You learn how to speak to them. You learn how you want them to speak to you, what you can do, you want from them. And then it just translates on the field. And that's why they always talk about, like, team environment and stuff. And that's a big crucial part of it, is, like, getting to know your teammates off the field. And that way everyone knows where you're coming from when you speak on the field as well.
Yeah, because if you respect each other all the way around, then that'll show on the field. If you don't have that personal connection, then it's going to show on the field as well, that disconnect.
Yeah, exactly. I used to have to apologize, like, when I was younger, I would have to, like, apologize, like, and I would just, like, I'd always be like, guys, I yell on the field. I'm not yelling at you. Like, I'm yelling to you. Sometimes it comes across me, but then I obviously it grew and I realized I was like, there is a way to actually just like not have to say that. But like when I was younger, I felt the need to be like, I'm not yelling at you. Like, I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to, so you can hear me over everyone else.
I think every sentence in Japanese starts with, I'm sorry. So it's, so it's sumimasen. And then they told our girls that whenever they travel to the United States, don't apologize to people because it's admitting fault. I was like, but every word that came out of my mouth was like, I'm sorry. Yeah. But can you please get back on the weak side?
I want to talk about this because you just brought up a really good point there, Audrey, in regards to, you know, a lot of young goalkeepers, they're so scared to communicate because they're afraid of how they're going to be perceived by their teammates. And I especially see this when we're talking about kind of like that foundational age of communication, which is, because I'll be honest with you, when I'm talking about like 9s, 10s, 11s, I think communication, any coach that's getting upset that, you know, their goalkeeper's not, you know, talking about dropping back to the back post and, you know, stepping up and those sorts of things is like, you're way ahead of the game right there. But when we start talking about 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, you know, I've seen this is like, well, I don't want them to hate me. These are older players. Let's say if you're playing high school and you're a freshman on the varsity and you, what do you say to a junior and your senior? I don't want them to hate me, you know? So what advice do you give to players in this type of scenario?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of take a little bit of a different stance. I know, I think that it does start with the youth of getting them the confidence to speak, because then even the other players will hear it more. So it doesn't, it's not like a, oh my God, all of a sudden this person is instructing me to do something. It's, oh, she's just telling me what to do because she sees it or he sees it. So I think like the advice would be really just like we talked about a little bit of like having effective communication of where it's more direction and simple, concise, because then it's also easier to sound like you're just giving the advice versus telling someone what to do, like with a full sentence. Like if you want to say back post, you just say back post, or like if you're saying in the middle, person, like middle, like very simple, concise, like people will know. And then something that I have been taught is to always say the person's name that you're specifically saying it to, because otherwise one, people won't listen. They don't know that you're talking to them. Or two, they just think you're just constantly yelling. They don't translate it in their brain that like, oh, you're speaking to me. They just think, God, she yells a lot. Or like that person, like, God, they're just yelling a lot. Instead of just like this person's name, this is the instruction, and that's it.
It designates responsibility, because it's the 911 scenario, right? In psychology, if there's a crowd of people and you're like, call 911.
Yeah.
No, but everybody's going to think somebody else is doing it, right? But if you say, hey, Mike, call 911, and then it's your responsibility to do it. And so, you know, and it's got to be sound bites. It can't be this like long drawn out like rhetoric. It's got to be, you know, Mike, back post, you know, or Mike, watch your weak side. And then it's your responsibility. And if you get beat weak side, I told you.
Now, Audrey, what you will learn about Saskia is that she's very good at delegating. She's fantastic. And she learned this
I think
all her years of experience as a goalkeeper. But she's very good at delegating.
I think that was a personal dig right there. I am very good at delegating responsibility. 100%.
Audrey, I want to talk about a little bit about nonverbal communication, because especially obviously when you're talking about, we were joking around a bit about the jazz hands and the musical theater, you know, when you're in an environment with this, you know, with a bunch of different women that, you know, speak a bunch of different languages all on the same field at the same time. But I want to talk about like just your behavior, how your behavior can reflect how your teammates handle you and handle a situation.
Yeah. I mean, I've run into this a lot where it's like a good goalkeeper, but they are always just like bringing everyone down just with their attitude, with their body, or like not being ready with their body. And goalkeeping is such a big position that the team puts a lot of trust into you. So that does go with communication as well. Like they're going to trust you the more they realize, oh, you're communicating to me. So then the more they trust you, the more they're looking at every little thing that you do, how you put the ball down for a goal kick, how you're tossing the ball to someone, how you're walking around, how you're reacting if they make a mistake. All these different things, they all add into what your team is perceiving you by and how they're going to trust you. And if they don't trust you, they're not going to trust your communication, then they're not going to want you in the goal. And then it goes as far as like the coaches see it. Coaches see if, I mean, I've caught myself a lot. I won't lie. This year we had an issue with scoring and I, by the end of the season, I won't lie. And like, I'm sorry if any of my teammates are watching or my coaches, but I think I punched the ground on the last game. I was so mad. Like, and I don't mean to, and that's the exact thing you shouldn't be doing, right? Like, you are a team, like you are doing this together. And by doing something like that, use me as an example, it shows that there is a disconnect. And like, obviously I can't go up and score. So yeah, there was a disconnect just in that sense of like, I just really wanted to win, but you have to be able to control it. And that also goes to emotional control as a goalkeeper in the net. Like, you need to have it all. And so by controlling your actions, you can think it, you can think that you're mad, but it's, you cannot like turn around and put it out there that you are. So the good stance, everything, it all comes across.
You know, yeah, I think Tony DiCicco, you said, he'd just say act as if, right? And so that was it. And it even went down to like fitness, right? Mm-hmm. It was act as if. So if we were doing like pressure training or something, when you were done with the drill, you wouldn't stay on the ground. It was like, pop right back up, act as if might want to throw up, right? Yep. But it was like, act as if it didn't faze you. Like, because it's perceived that way. You know, we all make mistakes in goal, but if you're slumped over, if you're still on the ground, if the ball's still in the back of the net, your team feeds off that energy. And so, you know, that's nonverbal, but they feed off that energy. It brings me back, and I can say this because she's right now the best goalkeeper in the country and playing amazing. But when we lost last year at UCLA, in the first round of the NCAA tournament, the goal that was scored on Lauren, she sat on the ground. It was first half. She sat there like totally defeated. And I remember Amanda going, get up. Like, what are you doing? It resonated. Like, the coaches saw it. And I was like, what are you doing? Just get up. It's first half. Like, you know, but those are things that as a leader, as a goalkeeper, you can't see, you can't have it seen. You know, and like, because you don't want the forward pounding their hand into the ground if you make a mistake or a goal is scored, or being like, what the heck, you know, because that feeds to the entire team. You have to act as if, hey, dust it off. Let's go. Let's keep going.
And I mean, I can even share just a story, just a simple fact of myself. You know, a few years back, you know, when I was playing at an elite level where I also had to have a job as well. Shout out to the lower leagues on the men's side too. It's a lot of fun too. I got scored on a goal that I was very upset because it went directly through my hands. My whole back line looked at me literally as if I was the worst goalkeeper I've ever seen in my life. I was so upset with myself that I punched the post and I lost my job. I didn't play the rest of that season. I didn't play the rest of that season.
But the point is like, who's that for? Right. Mm-hmm. So like, all right, we know you made a mistake. Let it go. Like, are you saying that I know I made a mistake and I'm showing you by being upset? Like, we know you made the mistake. We know you shanked the punt. We know it. I don't like, you know, I always teased you that Lauren would always look over at me like, and I'd be like, I'm not looking at you. Like, why are you staring at me? Like, I know that you just shanked the goal kick. Like, I know you know that. Like, let it go.
And I think, I mean, like for this year for me, I don't know what it is. I also just didn't put so much pressure on myself. So when I did make a mistake, I was like, okay, like on to that. Like, and I think that it did build more bonding. And like you said, then they were okay with making mistakes and then they would just back me up. So then when I did make mistakes, it was like, okay, maybe we'll talk about it later, but like of how to fix it. But it was never a thing. Like no one ever like actually blamed me for a goal. Even if I knew that it was 100% my fault, they were just like, no, but I could have done this. It really created such a good environment. And I've never been on a team like this where I don't think it was like any goal that I let in this season that my team was pissed at me for. Sorry, I don't know if I'm on the coast,
but yeah, you can say
that. Okay. That was mad at me for. Like, and they actually, even like at the very beginning of the season, I made a really stupid mistake and the whole team's like, nope, let's go. Like,
yeah, because it's the way you react to it.
Yep.
You know, and because if the team has to then worry about lifting you back up and your spirits back up and they have to emotionally take time to do that, that's not what you want, you know, and you've just exacerbated the mistake you made. Like, you know, now you're turning it into a big issue.
Exactly. And you never know who's watching. Like, I know that little girls are watching me, especially here. Little girl, like little girls are in the stands watching me. And during preseason, I had one go through my hands as well. Like, I don't even know how it happened. It was just
What's up with you two?
I know. I changed my just like, just catch the ball. I didn't drop
any. What are you doing?
Catch the ball.
So, but like, I knew that little girls were watching, and I just know that they're like waiting. And here I am, like trying to teach them mental skills of short memory. Okay, on to the next. Being able to stay focused. I'm like, okay, well, if I'm gonna preach that, I need to do that to myself as well. And I need to do it for my team. And that's also like how the youth are learning it. And I mean, you, especially guys though, they like to punch the post. So I'm not surprised that you ended up punching the post, Meg. But like, it's a lot of things, especially like Joe Burns.
But it's why I don't demo anymore in practice. Like, I'm like, I don't have to do that. You just in your head think I can do that perfectly because that's how I teach it. Yeah, I'm not sharing that. Like, I've done stuff where it like hit perfectly and I'm like, I don't have to do it again. That's fine. I'm good.
Just wave the hand. That's it for me. I'm good.
Mic drop. That was it.
That happened at a UCLA camp years ago that I was working, and we were doing a crossbar challenge, and like go up there, and it's this guy who just got drafted in the first round of the MLS draft, like big time player. And he goes up there and he doesn't hit the crossbar, and they're like, all right, well, you gotta match this or whatever. And I'm like, so I go and I just hit it cleanly. And they're like, this guy's better than that. I'm like, no, I am not.
Just walk away.
Let's just walk away. We're going to leave it at this.
It was raining one day. We were in the gym and we were doing like long throws. And like, I used to do this at Rutgers where I'd take like a bag of balls and do half court shots. Right. Like just to get the proper technique. I would do it all the time. And then I'd go even forward. So I was on the court and I was like, so this is a great way when you have this to just work on like, you know, how to, cause you have to throw it perfectly to do it. And I took the ball and I just, more than half court, dunked it right in air, and I was like, see, that's how you do it. And I'm like,
see, that's it. It's that easy.
Not doing it again.
Let's move into some of these scenarios right here, because I want to kind of, you know, paint the pictures here for people in regards to, from a communication standpoint, what's going on here. Audrey, you and I talked off the air in regards to some of the recent footage. So we've gone back here and we found some footage of you playing, I think in your Jason Bourne journey over here in Cyprus. If anybody here can tell me where Cyprus is exactly, I think, is it the Mediterranean? Where is it exactly?
Is it the Mediterranean? Yes.
Yeah, okay. The Mediterranean. It's right near, like, Turkey.
Yeah,
off Turkey.
Yeah, off the coast.
You are there.
Well, yeah. I played Algarve Cup originally used to be played in Cyprus. So we actually went there and played as the national team once.
Oh, wow.
Very nice.
This is before you were born.
How do you pronounce the name? Is it Apollon?
Apollon, yeah, I think Apollon. That's how I pronounced it. So,
this is Apollon versus Kharkiv, which I think is from Ukraine.
Yeah.
This is in the 52nd minute. We're going to kind of walk through this here, right here. But Arina Kochevna dribbles in towards the edge of 18 and plays a through ball to Yulia Shevnuk in the channel, who plays a cross ball in towards. Oh, look at that. Look at that clean hold by Audrey right there. And then see the hand gesture. We're talking about that those nonverbal cues right there. Let's kind of walk through this right here. And let's kind of see what you were thinking first off in the moment. Obviously this is a, you know, high level, this is Champions League, right? You're playing right here.
Okay. Yeah.
This is Champions League. So you can't get really any higher than that. So as this ball is being dribbled right here, we always talk, Saskia, obviously, about, you know, when the ball's outside the 18, this is when you do your organization. This is when you do it. Once it starts getting in closer towards the 18, you're done with. So what are you thinking right here, Audrey?
I mean, the first thing I'm sure I said was, the back post. That's what I always check first, because no one is really ever looking, especially in a four back, because they tend to like come really close in thinking that they need to if the ball's like all the way on the flank. So the first thing I always look is the back post. And then I always tell my center back to be touch tight. And it looks like, I think it's Julia that's in the back. She like puts her arm out immediately. So I just feel like that was always a communication that, especially with this team, that I liked, because they were all American in the back. But like, as soon as I would say something, they would like either nod to me or they would point to know exactly that I was speaking to them. So they knew, like, it was really good that we both could go back and forth with that.
Yeah. So then, and on what you were saying, Mike, is that, you know, you've got to get the organization done early, quick bullet point. And then once it becomes in, you have to focus on your task at hand.
Yes.
You know, and I've had that. And I told you, I've had that in practice where goalkeeper's still organizing and the ball's basically in the back of the net. Yeah. And then I'm like, why are you still like pointing and organizing? The ball's in the back of the net now. Like, yep, you've got to stop at a certain point and focus on the task at hand.
I had a really bad habit of doing that. And I think a lot of that was me putting the responsibility on somebody else as opposed to me. And like, so if like subconsciously, if I'm communicating right now, well, then if anything happens, it's not on me, it's on them. You know, we're learning a lot about me today. This is very concerning.
It is true though. Like, especially when I was on like weaker teams, like in Kosovo, for example, I felt the need to over communicate because they didn't really know when you're playing these higher level teams, like what to do. So I felt the need, because I knew what they were supposed to do, I just felt the need to always talk. And during like the preseason, when we were training, my goalkeeper coach was like, you don't need to change your game so much. Like, you need to focus on you as well. That's why they brought you in. Like, if you're coaching too much on the field, you can't do what you're going to do. And I do catch myself doing that sometimes, at least always in the preseasons, I feel the need and I can't focus as fast. And then as it goes on, then you always like are able to kind of fade it out and just focus on what you're doing.
Yeah. And sometimes they'll just start tuning you out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So now I got a question. So now once she gets into this wide channel right here and she's got the ball, I think this is Shevnuk right here. What's now going through your head right here? And what, because it looks like they're pretty organized in the back right there. That looks pretty solid right there.
Yeah. I can tell I'm pointing. I always point. It's like, I don't like it so much. Like if I could take that habit out, I wouldn't point so much, especially when I'm this close to the goal. But yeah, I'm definitely making sure that my girls are there. And then I'm probably checking if there's someone coming in and then just waiting for the cross at that point would be my guess.
Yeah. And then when the cross comes in right here, I think, you know, the language, see, here's another thing we were talking about, nonverbal language. The way that you come out for this ball, and then I noticed that your player gets out of the way when you go in and attack the ball.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like fun.
She actually picks the player against her.
Yeah.
Which is great defensively. Yeah. Like, look, she's actually picking that player. Like, you know, how many people don't do that?
Yeah. Exactly. Oh my gosh. They were actually really good at it because, I mean, we had a very good bond in the back. Like I said, because we were all American as well. It's a little bit easier, but me yelling keeper, they knew I'm going to come out if I'm yelling that it's mine. And I, yeah, for 100% that's Julia Lester, but they knew that.
Yeah.
They knew that that's exactly what that was. Their next move was
to give you the lane. Yeah.
Yeah. Just by saying keeper, they knew exactly that I was coming. And now their job was to protect that player and protect me on the, if I drop it or anything, they knew that that was going to be theirs.
Yeah.
So I want to bring this up right here because I think a lot of young goalkeepers need to see this, this isn't the final action. The final action isn't the ball in your hands from a communication standpoint. The final action is here where you're now, and you can see it, the gesture right there. And then you can even see on the close-up right there that you're basically dictating the tempo of the game. I think a lot of young goalkeepers need to see that because a lot of them, you know, they go by the tempo of their team as opposed to what they think based on the picture they're seeing from scanning on what's the right decision.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, we see everything, like we said, and they can call for it all they want. but in the end, it's your decision. And you just have to be confident with what your decision is instead of second guessing. Like, I stuttered there. Yeah. You can see that I stuttered, but I was like, nope, like I knew that I didn't want to throw it there to begin with. I probably shouldn't have even faked it unless something else happened that we can't see off screen. But like sticking with that decision, just being confident with what you're doing, with the communication as well. Like, nope, we're going to slow it down. Let's move on.
Yeah. And that's a thing you brought up earlier, Mike, when you have like young goalkeepers and they're maybe, you know, younger than the people they think, all right, so-and-so is calling for the ball. It means I have to give it to them. Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you take like, I don't know, Alex Morgan is calling for the ball and it's Alex Morgan, I've got to give her the ball. That's not the right decision. And you're seeing the whole field, you know, and you can't, you have to be able and confident in saying, wait, no, you don't see that somebody's just baiting you, waiting for me to throw this ball to you right now. And it's going to be a quick transition. They're going to be right back down my throat. And you have to be confident in saying, no, I don't, I see what you don't see. You're not getting the ball, no matter how mad or upset they might get.
Yeah, exactly.
It's your decision.
Exactly.
I was going to say,
it comes back on you. In the end, like if you make that decision, it comes back on you. So you can see it. So if you decide to still throw it to that person and they come back and they score, you're the one that made that pass. You're the one that threw that ball, seeing that there was a girl there, like you have the ball. It's just the same as when it's on your feet and you decide not to pass it to someone, like in any position. So taking the time to be calm in that situation.
Yeah. And you also take those quick snapshots where you know where your team is, right? So even you know in your peripheral, okay, I've pulled this cross down. Now there's some times where one of my favorite things to do was to pull a cross like this down and know that I've got Mia Hamm one-on-one up top and knock a long ball, which I found out not like a year ago that she hates heading the ball. So, but knocking that long ball and sending her, but that might've changed in that split second. That situation might've changed. Her position might've changed. And so being able to change your thought process there and say, oh, wait, it's not on anymore and slow it down.
Yeah. It's good. Yeah. Before we move on from this clip, I just want to bring up one thing in regards to when you're looking at that snapshot. I think a lot of times like players will have their, you know, their back to the field and they'll be facing you and they're checking for the ball and they're calling for the ball. I think a lot of times, at least, and I don't know how you guys feel, but we have to take into consideration that like these aren't robots. These are human beings with emotions and egos. And a lot of times they may believe in themselves more than they should in the moment.
Yes.
Yeah. 100%.
But you also, and they might not realize that the person marking them or nearby is saying, oh, please throw that ball to her right now.
Yeah.
Right?
And then you also, you also look at like, okay, does this person have support if they do lose it? Like there's so many other things that it's not even just like the one-on-one that the ego doesn't think of, but you're seeing like, okay, but if she can't turn, does she have someone to lay it off to if she needs to? If she does turn, is there another pass for her to go to? Like, what is the actual whole situation? It's crazy to think about all these things in a split second, but you do.
You do. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to another play right here. So this is, I think, a couple minutes later in the exact same game.
I remember this game.
Audrey's like, oh yeah, this was fun. This is the 54th minute. And I think this is like a give and go between, I'm going to be really bad at these names, of Dietrich. Has a give and go at the edge of the 18 to overlapping midfielder who laps the back to Olga into open space. She takes one touch forward. Audrey, I love the fact that you hold that position right there. And it's just a quick touch towards post. You play it away. You've got all your angles covered. Remember how we were talking about how, like, you know, there's a time to communicate and there's a time not to communicate. And this is not the time when you should be chatting it up with your back line, because the action is right in front of you and you need to be aware of what could happen.
Yeah, exactly.
I think probably the only thing here would be step ball. And then that's the end of it. Whoever, Olga, I don't know her name, whoever, you know, step ball. But then again, now you have to focus.
Yeah. And I can see again, I definitely pointed to the back post. But that's like my go-to, like I have these things.
I do that too.
Yeah. And you just, but you also just know that like they need to know. It doesn't matter who's there. Like you just know that these are things you need to say and they just come automatic at that point. Like I'm pointing to say back post or in the middle.
But you don't have to look.
I don't even need to look. And it doesn't take an extra thought process at all. I'm still focused on the ball to be able to do what I need to do in this moment. But you always know you need to yell back post. You always know like And this is where scanning comes in before it even comes to this point as well, of where they're making the runs and your peripherals of just knowing, okay, this person coming to the center, you know, you need to yell center. Doesn't even matter who at that point, like you're just like saying it. So maybe someone will like just be able to listen. But that, yeah, then you just focus on the ball.
See, but okay. But I love this. Go ahead, Saskia.
So, Patrick Seymour just texted me, obviously watching, and I said, "Hi, Patrick." And I think he's throwing back to when I teased you two for not catching the ball, and he's like, "Catch the freaking ball!"
Yeah, he totally said that to you. Yeah, she wasn't on early enough for me to say it to her.
he said, "Catch the freaking ball," because he knows that's all I ever say. I'm like, "Hold on to the ball, catch the ball."
Yeah.
Oh my god. Wait, Audrey. So Audrey, what's the connection between you and Patty? I got to know this.
I moved out to Redondo last year, and I was connected with him, someone that was, I worked at a gym, and we got connected. And so he was training me and helping me back from my injury. So he's the reason I came back from my injury.
Wow.
Yeah, I love it. He teases me all the time.
I want to bring this up right here in regards to the cue, like the hand gesture pointing type of a thing. I love the fact that you have such a rapport with your teammates that they know immediately what that means. Like you don't need to explain what that means. Like you guys have this kind of this almost like telepathy now that means like go across and cover that gap. Because if I spill this ball, someone needs to be there in a position. And I love it right here. Go ahead.
But I think like what we were saying before Patrick ticks was that you don't have to look. And I think we get a lot of, you know, at every level, I'm like, why are you looking to make sure somebody's marked up back post? Just say it. Like, yeah. you know who your teammates are. You know their name. Just say it and keep your eye on the situation in front of you. Like, yeah. you don't have to go make sure they're doing it. That's their job. Exactly. You know, call their name. Do your jester back post and focus.
Yeah.
And you see a lot.
I'll say that's a crucial thing that like, since we talked about me switching teams so much, is like learning the names of who's going to be in your back. Like, and it has been hard before because obviously names do not come easily when they're all foreigner names, as we're witnessing now. And it's like, but you need to know exactly who they are, who is in that position. Like, even if you can't see them, you can yell their name and know that that's where they're supposed to be anyway, at least, especially like in these types of situations where they're this close to goal, it's obviously where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I was just going to say, like, if you didn't make that point, and you know, I know you joke around about the point or whatever, but if you didn't give some sort of direction before the ball got in closer towards goal, she doesn't hold that position right there. And that's a goal because on that spill right there, there's nobody there supporting. I mean, obviously you were able to get up and collect the ball, but if let's just say, a goalkeeper wasn't as strong as you, Audrey, and the ball was spilled a little bit worse. That's a goal. Maybe a youth game or whatever. That's a goal. So it's the difference between, you know, winning a game and losing a game. So then again, look at the body language. Oh, so now this is where it got a little crazy. I was trying to find some footage at HK. and you know, in regards to the names, I'm not even going to try. Because this is very, very
I'm trying to like figure out who this looks like. Valor is who we're playing against. It's like this now, they're like the number one in Iceland right now. So
my things might hear in the notes go.
Well, time you just and basically everybody's daughter. Just remember that.
Yeah.
No, it's true. So it's like Shannon's daughter.
Yeah.
Or that's how their last names are. So just you can just say daughter is on the post. There you go.
Oh my god, oh, that's
you
hilarious.
Didn't know that? So
no, oh, that makes sense. Like Gudjonsson and Johansson.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's son and daughter.
Son and daughter. So it's John's son. So your last name is Johansson.
Like, oh my god.
Or it's Jim's daughter. Yeah, that's how it works. You didn't realize that. It's not just everybody that has the same last name. That's how it's set up.
I just thought it was just such a small island.
See, they're all the same.
It's like Asgard. I just thought it was just like a small little village.
They're all related. That's it.
They have magical powers. Okay. So this ball is dribbled in towards the top of the D. There's a cutback right here. Boom. and then it's a slip ball. You recognize immediate danger and you just come up big and come out for the ball. Again, no communication really necessary in this moment right there. And you took her out. That's for sure. Jeez Louise. She's not going to do that again.
This is really random, but the reason I took her out is because I know exactly what the game this was. This was the second half of a very, very brutal game that I was getting annihilated. And like, just like they were coming after me. So I was like, no mercy. I didn't care anymore.
Oh my God. Look at that. So the slip ball. So the second that you recognize this slip ball right here, first off, again, the organization's already taken place here. So your team knows where they're playing a higher line. Obviously, you're a little bit deeper position. But the second that cutback happens, we notice that you step up a little bit right there because you're kind of getting ready for that ball to be played in. And that second that that is played, you've made that decision to come out, approach, hold position, and then just get big right here and let her come to you, force her to make a move right there, which is always what Suski always says, force them to make the move in the scenario right here. This is communication in my book too, because it's body language. The way that you came out at her, the way you approached her, your team sees you. If you're a young goalkeeper and your team sees you come out like this, they're going to respect you more. And the other team is also going to have second thoughts about playing that ball next time.
Yeah. I mean, and I think, like I've said before in this podcast, I think it all comes down to the confidence of everything you're doing, of what you're speaking, your body language, everything. And I know it's really easy to say like, oh yeah, just be confident. But I never was before. Well, really ever. So I don't know why I'm saying before. But like, I'm learning that that was my problem or is my problem is the confidence. But like, when you're confident, then the body language comes across more positive, and why you're doing it for passion. Like, you're doing it for the game, you're doing it for your team. But when you're second guessing it, I mean, like that, that's when people lose trust. And even if you're a really great goalkeeper, that's when people start to lose trust in it.
Yeah. And we got that ball. I hope she was okay. I hope she was okay. You're like, eh, whatever.
I remember this. I didn't walk after this game, so
she act as if she needs to get up.
Oh my gosh! And again, leveling it there. All right. Well, let's. I know we're running low on time right here, so we'll get off of those clips right there. Audrey. Obviously, you know, you've been doing a lot of mental skills work, and you've been doing a lot of, you know, talking about public speaking and leadership, you know, and all that sort of thing. Why do you think that getting involved in public speaking and even, you know, if that you're a shy person or whatever, is so beneficial for a young goalkeeper to develop that skill set?
It's the confidence. It's the knowing what you want to communicate and how to communicate it. And with trial and error as well. So the more you do it, just like any other skill, the more you practice it, the more you try, and the more you get more comfortable with things, the better you will be at it. And I always make my goalkeepers, when I coach them or any of the field players, even in the gym, I make them talk to me. Of course, I design drills where they have to speak sometimes to me, and like always calling it or calling out numbers, whatever it is. But even if like it's after a session, okay, what did you learn? And especially like here in Iceland, like it's really hard. They know English, but they are nervous. I'm like, I don't care if you say it to me in Icelandic, but what did we do today? And they try and just mime it. And I'm like, no, say it to me. Say it out loud. What did we do? And just like those little things of like knowing what you want to say and how to say it all goes into your the way that you play and the way you are as a person, are able to communicate as a person. And again, I do the same thing with my strength and conditioning kids that I do in the gym or mental skills. You have to talk to me. Like, okay, I make everyone lead in a stretch. Every single person has to say something. And if they don't say it loud enough, I'm just waiting until they say it loud enough. It doesn't count. Like, it's just gaining the confidence, gaining the comfortability to say something stupid, maybe say something wrong. And it's just like a physical skill. You have to constantly practice. So the more you can do it, the more comfortable and confident you'll get with it.
I think that's absolutely correct. You know, as we wrap this up right here, you know, Saskia, I mean, you know, we joke about, you know, the fact of all these other things that you're doing off the field now, and obviously, you know, coaching and now sports commentating. You know, I think that the fact that you have these solid public speaking skills is because you developed those skill sets early on when as a goalkeeper and playing lacrosse and all those things, as you know, as a youth player.
Yeah. I mean, it, you know, it translates like we said in the beginning, it translates into on the field, off the field, into everything you do and how you communicate with people, how you handle people, how you direct people, how you direct responsibility, dictate responsibility.
Wasn't my fault. I said back post. I don't know what to tell you. The ball was in the 6-yard box and I told him back post.
But it's also, like we said, everybody reacts differently to certain things. And you have to realize who those individuals are. And you have to realize it's not all screaming at people. Sometimes it's just a conversation. Sometimes it's the tone of voice that you give direction. You're not going to say the same tone of voice in a high pressure situation when you need somebody to pressure ball that you are when your team's in the attacking third and you're just making sure your defense is organized. You're not going to use the same tone. Right. Yep. If you always have the same tone, then people aren't going to know when something is like immediate apparent or like, okay, so and so, just make sure you're pinched in over here. That's it. It's not make sure you're pinched in over here when there's no pressure on the ball, and then it's not like there like the whole time. You can't be one level, and not everybody reacts that way. You know, some people are like, stop screaming at me.
Yeah. That is such a great point of like the different levels that you can have and people needing to know how to convey emotions and intensity and everything like that. And like you said, there's even times, like especially as a goalkeeper and a leader in the back, of when the ball's out, someone's down or something, calling your players in. Okay, this is what you need to do here. This mm-hmm. is, and then it's a more calm situation. You can get your point more like better across and you can actually be calm and like settle down, knowing those moments of when to be intense and when to be like, okay, come in, relax, but this is what you need to do better. Like, I'm not going to yell at you for it, especially with younger players, let's say, or ones that are more inexperienced that need just that relax. You know how to do this, but this is what I need you to do.
Yeah. And I will say one thing, don't ever, like, it's not a question. It's not keeper. I think.
You know what I mean? Is it mine? Just
clear.
Or keep away. How about keep away? People. How about keep away? Keep away.
It's just
keep away.
When you make a statement, have confidence.
Make your decision and stick to it.
It's not up for like debate.
Well, I'm definitely going to be replaying this episode before my game tomorrow. I'll tell you that, because there's definitely some notes here that I need to take into consideration, considering I talk like it's a World Cup final sometimes. And they're like, dude, 2 minutes into the game, dude, relax. Audrey, if people want to connect with you, I know you're doing a lot of cool stuff off the field. Why don't you talk a little bit about that as we wrap up right here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm starting to really work off the field a lot with mental skills training and especially just like with confidence, athletic identity, especially in these types of times, getting to know how to work all of that. So if you want to get in touch, I'm on every social media as oddball_00 everywhere with that, just oddball, oddball_00. And yeah, I'm so willing to help anyone that wants it or just wants to talk about experiences or how to get abroad or anything. I have some interesting stories and I love to share them.
Awesome. I mean, and guys, obviously if you want to reach out to us, you know, do it on the Union. That's probably the best place to do it. If you don't know what that is yet, check out the free Union Soccer community on all platforms. That's a smart link. It'll send you to whatever device you use. It's fully interactive. It is free. Share your own content. Subscribe today. Audrey's going to start putting some oddball content out there, I'm sure. Sharing it up there, engaging. And if you want to get on this show, guys, or if you have a guest suggestion or a topic suggestion, contact at InsideThe18Media.com or at Goalkeeper Podcast on all social medias, including the Union. You're probably wondering, how did Audrey get on the show? She hit us up. That's all you got to do. If you got a story, if you got something you share that you feel is relevant to the community, oh boy, we're going to get a lot of DMs right now. But if we feel it's relevant to the community, we'd love to hear what you got to say. And if you want to reach out to Saskia Weber, it's at Saskia Weber on the Union or at Saskia_Weber on
the other
social medias. Catch the ball. Catch the ball. Reach out to me. You can do it at michaelmadgedcomedy.com. That's the best place, or at Michael Madged. That is all the time on Inside the 18, and we are out. Later, guys.